Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. There is no question smartphone and cell phone use have changed the way we use telephones. Landlines are almost a thing of the past. Phone booths have disappeared. The hardware has changed dramatically. Dial phones, long gone. But telephones of days gone by have an important history, and a lot of it is being preserved in our very own museum dedicated to the telephone. It's the Jefferson Barracks Telephone Museum. Joining me in studio to talk about the museum and the history are Carol Johannes, Museum Executive Director, and Assistant Director Ken Schaefer. Thank you both so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Carol, let me begin with you. It's no accident, I guess, that you're located in Jefferson Barracks, because I just learned, getting ready for your visit, that there was some phone history made right there.
There was the original long-distance call from downtown St. Louis, long-distance line from downtown St. Louis to Jefferson Barracks was established in 1898.
Ken, that's a long-distance call.
Yes, a lot of people don't realize that was long-distance at the time, but the problem they were having was a lot of the troops that were being deployed didn't have the necessary supplies, so they talked to the president of Southern Railway, and they got the long-distance lines run along the train tracks down to Jefferson Barracks, and then that way they could actually then contact the quartermaster downtown to actually get the supplies they needed and in a timely manner, and then they would deliver them to Jefferson Barracks as the troops were being deployed.
And what year was this?
In 1898.
1898.
Yes.
Well, were there longer long-distance lines back in that time?
I'm sure there were between some of the larger cities.
We're talking
cities.
A couple of miles. Yeah.
Right. Well, long distance was very in its early stages. So some of the larger cities probably had long distance. I believe we have a display of a listing from Atlanta, Georgia, where there was a long distance to another city in Georgia. So some of the larger areas probably had long distance, but very few and far between in that time.
Now, are both of you guys former employees of Southwestern Bell and or AT&T?
Yes, I worked Southwestern Bell, SPC, AT&T for 35 years, and I retired about 3 years ago.
Right, and this company is very much involved with the museum, correct?
Well, companies. The telecom pioneers are the ones who are behind it as far as doing all the volunteer work. So that's basically our affiliation with the phone company.
Carol, how about you? Are you affiliated with Southwestern Bell, AT&T?
Absolutely. I worked in Yellow Pages for 27 years.
Okay. Well, I ask that. I want to bring that forward because I just want to get your take before we continue on the phone world today, the use of cell phones. We talked about long distance. I mean, that's a totally different world today than it was even just a few years ago. Ken, what's your take on the cell phone use and what they can do and how they're used?
Well, what we're finding today is now if you still have a landline in your home, you're probably in the minority, because most people are really probably getting rid of their landline telephone and going with cell phones, because they can make free long distance calls and do just about anything they would like with the cell phone. So it's kind of part of history that's kind of going away, and we want to continue to share that history with our visitors.
Carol, how about you in terms of what's going on today?
Cell phones are great. They do a lot of things that obviously the older phones couldn't. But when you look at the history, we have roughly 140 years of history from the oldest phones that we have to the latest. And as Ken said, that history is kind of going away. Everybody today knows what a cell phone is. We have kids who come in and they look at a rotary dial phone and have no idea what it is or how to use it because they've grown up with cell phones. So they're great, and I'm sure, you know, everyone at some point in time is going to take that route to a cell phone. But we just think it's so important to preserve the history, to tell people it took us this long, and here's what we had to go through to get to that cell phone that you have.
You talk about dial phones. What about operators and switchboards and things of that, and party lines?
Absolutely.
Right.
Go
ahead.
Well, we have a couple switchboards, and we tell people about party lines. And for the most part, the kids are just, they look at us like we're making this stuff up. It's like, what do you mean you had to share your phone? So those are things that we like to share with our visitors. A lot of them remember it. Some of the older folks come in and go, oh, yeah, I had a party line. you know, we had that 40-call limit thing. So those things are kind of interesting to share.
All right. We have a caller who wants to get in on the party line discussion. So let's bring David in right now. Go ahead, David. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I want to talk about the party line. I lived in the country in the 70s, early 70s, and there was four ringtones so that they rung at all four houses. And if it was your ringtone, you picked up and answered the phone. My mother would get a phone call from her friend, and they would hear a click from one of the other people, and they would ad-lib soap opera on the telephone. And this woman, this person was eating it up.
Thank you very much, David. Both my guests here are smiling. Ken, you've been down this road before, have you?
Yeah, that's probably the comment we hear the most about party lines is everybody listened to everybody else because they wanted to know what business was going on in their family's lives. So
there were no secrets. I talked to someone this morning, particularly in small towns. Everybody knew who the person was on the other end of the party line.
Yes. I know growing up, I actually had, we shared a party line with our next door neighbor. Well, growing up, we had no air conditioning, so we had the windows open. Well, her telephone would ring, we'd go in and answer it, and it was for Betty, our neighbor. So it was kind of hard sometimes to distinguish if you're outside in the summer months.
Carol, now we have to turn to Facebook to find out what our neighbors are doing.
Well, that's true.
Let's talk a little bit about what is on display there. Obviously, you've got a lot of hardware. Carol, give me some sense of the kinds of things that you have for folks to see at the museum.
We have over 300 telephones on display, ranging from the old wooden wall phones up to cordless phones and some novelty phones for the kids. We also have test sets, a couple switchboards, 1940s wooden telephone booth, a lot of old documents from the late 1800s and early 1900s. Signs that would have been found on the outside of buildings where there was a pay telephone available.
What happened to all the phone booths? I mean, we woke up one morning and suddenly they were gone, like someone had taken them all.
Yeah, we have actually two phone booths, one actually on display, but a lot of people got those, and a lot of people have those in their homes. I was probably told early on, my wife said, we don't have room for a phone booth, so I don't personally have one, but we have a beautiful one in the museum that's from the late 40s. It's completely outfitted with the lights, the fans, the phone, everything. So I think a lot of them are still in people's homes.
Carol, is some of the gear that you have available there, is it still operational? Can people use it and find out, you know, what it sounded like and what it felt like to have an earpiece separate from the mouthpiece?
We do have a working step switch that we show people. It was invented and actually supported the direct dial from one telephone to another for several years. There are some other things that the kids can play with. We have a setup for a working telegraph key where they can actually practice sending their name, for example, using Morse code. Mm-hmm. We have some rotary dial phones that the kids can play with. It's amazing that these kids walk in and they have no idea what that is. They've never seen a rotary dial phone, have no idea how to use it. So there are some hands-on things that we have.
Ken, I've seen some references to self-guided tours there at the museum. What is that?
Well, Carol, actually, when we started this, we felt like if we're going to display it, we need to have information with it. So Carol, in her personal time, in the evenings after we got through working in the museum during the day, restoring the building, she would go home and actually do all the research on these items. So we have probably almost 1,100 plus items in the museum, and I'd say 99% of them probably have a card listed with them with a description of the item. We felt like if they're going to look at the item, they need to be able to see what the item is, and if they have questions, they can certainly ask us.
Carol, what's the oldest piece you have there? I may have missed it if you mentioned it before.
I believe we had some test sets from the very late 1800s that are probably our oldest pieces.
How did the phone evolve? How quickly did it evolve? I mean, sure, that's tracked by just the things that you have in the museum. In terms of, you know, they were probably not as good in the beginning as they were a few years later and years after that.
Well, I know some of the different test equipment in that. The test equipment from the old days, from the late 1800s, 1900s, it was very, very big and bulky, and really probably didn't give you the same functionality as a little small plastic unit today would give you. The fact that that step switch, the step switch we have in there, which is a working step switch, we can actually show that to you. It was used for about 75 to 80 years. So I can show you that the step switch was the main switch when you would actually pick up your telephone in your house. It would go to your central office, go to my central office, and then go and ring the telephone. So some things took time. The switches are probably a good example that it took the fact that they used them for 75, 80 years.
You look at the phones of the day going back to the early part of the last century. A lot of them are wooden. They were big boxes. But when did they begin to evolve to the streamlined plastic devices that most of us are familiar with? Carol, can you tell me that?
Well, the candlestick phones was the next step from the wooden wall phones. People wanted a desk set. Some of the wooden wall phones were pretty big.
Yeah.
And took up a lot of room. So they went to the candlesticks, which were about in the 1920s area. And from there, then they went to what they call the cradle phone, which has the separate receiver and the base. Those two required what they called a subset or a ringer box. The wiring and the bells to make it ring would not fit into the phone itself, so there had to be a separate box. And then around the late 30s, early 40s, all of the equipment could fit inside the base of the phones. And so from there on out, they just evolved to different models.
As things go, it was a fairly quick evolution, I guess we can say. Yeah. We've got a couple of callers who want to get into this conversation. Let's bring them in. We'll start with Monica, who is calling from St. Louis. Monica, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Well, good afternoon and to your guest. I often see on TV, the phone is ringing off the hook. That's one. The other one, operators standing by. Do you think that still exists?
Well, let's see if we can find out. The ringing off the hook, I guess, refers to the older phones, really. Carol, what do you think?
Well, if you have a landline, that certainly is, I think, still viable for you. Without a landline, I'm not sure that ringing off the hook is appropriate any longer. The hook switch is what was engaged when you picked up the receiver, and then when you replaced the receiver, you ended the call by hitting the hook switch. So that's where that off the hook kind of thing came from. Operators standing by, I don't know that there's, there are still some operators in business today. There are still 800 operators that I know of. I believe there's probably some information operators. Are there as many as there used to be? Absolutely not. A lot of it is mechanized, and you're probably hard-pressed to find a specific operator unless you're probably making a long-distance call that you need some assistance with.
A lot of people don't realize that the operators initially were male, but they replaced them with females back in 1883 because the males often talked back to the customer in objectionable language. So they felt like, well, maybe we need to replace them with ladies. And so the males were replaced back in 1883 with female operators.
Just a reference to making international calls and using operators. I kind of thought that was passé too.
Yes. Yes. In fact, a lot of operators were local operators. So if you actually wanted to get a long distance call, that operator would have to switch you over to another operator, which maybe had to switch you on to another long distance operator. So you wouldn't necessarily get to an operator who could actually forward your call for a long distance call.
But Carol, pretty much today you can just dial it. I use the word dial. Of course, you're not dialing anymore technically, but you can do it just by punching in the appropriate numbers, right?
You are correct. Most people, if they have the correct area codes or country codes, you can make that call without any interference from an outside operator or connection. You just dial it directly.
Right.
And in the background, the connection is made through the business offices.
Let's take another call. Fred is waiting to talk to us. He's calling from Glendale. Go ahead, Fred.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
Yeah, number, please. I was Republic 1951 as a little kid in 1940s, and I loved to talk to the operator. And my mother, as a young woman back in the early 1930s, was a switchboard operator for the Baby Label Bread Company. And every now and then, the ladies down there would get wise guys would call up on the line, and they'd say, "Baby Label Bread, can I help you?" And they'd say, "Well, whose baby are you?"
All right, Fred. Well, go ahead, Ken. You look like you want to say
something. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize back in 1909, there was only four numbers that were used. So in 1909, it cost $42.50 a year to have a telephone, and that was a two-party line telephone. So that's $3.50 a month. If you wanted to have another phone in your house, like in your basement, it was another dollar per month. So at the time, they only had the four numbers. Well, once they became more affordable, then they went to the seven numbers. Well, getting someone to remember seven numbers is a little bit more challenging than four. So then that's when they went to the Ivanhoe 7, 3035, or Twinbrook 2, or Prospect 1. And so to get people to remember the seven, they could actually remember the Prospect, the PR1, and then the other four numbers. So they used that designation probably until the 70s. A lot of people that come in, if they're probably over 40, 50 years old, every one of them remember what their home telephone number was using that designation, and that's going back about 45 years back to the 70s when they stopped using it.
That's interesting. I can still remember our first telephone number. That's going back a long way. One of our producers, Kelly, says, "I still remember my childhood home phone number. I'll never forget it." But she also asks, is something lost now? Because we don't have to memorize our phone numbers anymore. We just, they're all saved for us in our device. Is something lost?
Oh, I don't know. It's the sign of the times. Everyone's moving forward. I think some people miss talk, like this gentleman that called in before. There are some people that miss talking to the operators. In some of the smaller areas, the operators knew everyone. So when you called and you talked to the operator, she knew your friends, she knew your family, and it was like talking to an old friend. I think maybe some of that nostalgia is lost.
Fred also indicated there was a certain amount of pranking that went on by use of the telephone. That's, of course, just recollections some of us have from that day. I remember one, you would call the local drugstore or whatever and say, "Do you have Prince Albert in the can?" Speaking of pipe tobacco. And they would say, "Yes." And you would say, "Well, let him out." Ha ha. That's the kind of stuff we did when we were kids, folks. I'm sorry. It's pretty lame, isn't it?
Yeah. I think today people are a whole lot busier than they ever were. Back then, at least my mom didn't work at the time. She worked in the home raising four kids, so she had more time. But today, a lot of families, both the husband and wife, are working, and they got kids, and people were just stressed for time, and so they need something like the cell phone to make their life that much easier.
Well, there's no question that it does make a huge difference.
Yes,
and if you want to prank somebody, you can do that on the internet or what have you. About the museum now, it's not open every day of the week, is it, Carol?
No, we're open Wednesday through Sunday from 9 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay, and what is the charge for admission, Ken?
It's for adults, it's $5. For seniors 60 and over, it's $4. For children, I think 5 to 12, it's $3. Active military with an ID card, it's free, and kids under 5, it's free.
Yeah. In terms of the people who visit, generally, would you say is it an older group or a nostalgic group, or is it a lot of kids?
Well, we open on May the 4th, so we're open almost 4 months. And since kids got out of school, we found a lot of grandparents were bringing their grandkids by. So probably the first couple months, we had a lot of grandparents bringing grandkids by. Not necessarily at the same time. Maybe they'd bring one or two grandkids by one day, and then maybe a following week or two, they'd bring another one by. But I'd say probably we've had a lot of seniors, probably more than adults. We've had a lot of people from a lot of different states visit us. In fact, we've had a gentleman from Belarus visited us. I'm not sure how he found out about us, but mostly seniors probably right now because they're the ones with the great memories.
Any cell phones, Carol? Any cell phones on display?
Not yet. We take them up to cordless phones, and everybody that has a cell phone pretty much knows what they look like. So plans are right now just to keep the older phones on display because those are the ones that are hard to find.
Now, we do have some bag phones, and we do have some hardwired phones from the 70s and 80s, but as far as little handhelds, no.
Okay, well, I want to thank you both for being with us, Carol Johans and Ken Schaefer, for being with us. Sounds like a great place to visit. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air, a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.